When a good person walks out of your law firm, the costs are immense. Skilled lawyers and support staff seem in shorter supply than ever, so the loss of good team members is keenly felt. This phenomenon is not new, but it is growing, burgeoned by record low unemployment, increased competition, and technological disruption. Ready to overcome the skills shortage? Embrace technology. Automate mundane tasks. Offer your staff true flexibility. Learn how. Visit leap.com.au. Leap, the legal practice productivity solution. leap.com.au. This is a Momentum Media production. Welcome to the Lawyers Weekly Show for an in-depth look at the issues facing the legal profession.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lawyers Weekly Show. My name is Jerome Dorosami. Today I'm joined by Meg Crawford. She is a special counsel at Justitia Lawyers and Consultants based down in Victoria. Meg, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jerome.
Now, today we're going to be discussing lawyers working part-time for reasons other than caring responsibilities. And usually when we hear of legal professionals working in part-time arrangements, it's because they have young children to look after or other sort of caring duties at home to be catered to. But today we're going to be focusing on the idea of working part-time for, you know, lifestyle reasons, so that lawyers can pursue other, you know, vocational pathways or just anything else in their life that is meaningful and valuable to them. Listeners of this show might remember that we recently published an episode with award-winning lawyer Phoebe McDougall about how best lawyers can live their best lives, you know, be true to themselves and just get the work done during hours of the day that make the most sense to them. So it's nice for us to be able to continue in that vein with this conversation with Meg. So Meg, thanks for joining us again. Can you tell us a bit about yourself to start off? You know, how and why you chose to study and practice law in the first place?
Sure. So I'm going to be disclosing that I'm a massive dork in saying this. So I wanted to be a lawyer since I was five. I was watching Carson's Law, which really says something about my age, but Lorraine Bailey was a barrister on the show. And I watched her in court and can remember really clearly thinking, when I grow up, that's what I want to do. And then I set out to do it. I've always been an employment lawyer. And how that came to pass was basically trial and error. When I was at uni, I worked at a community legal service because initially I thought perhaps I wanted to work in criminal law or family, but I volunteered there for nearly 12 years. That wasn't for me. I worked as a clerk at an environment and planning firm. Did that for a number of years. Also not for me. Did a summer clerkship at Freehills in their employment team, and it really grabbed me. And I think the thing that always grabbed me about employment law is that next to your mates and your family, the most important thing to most people is their job. And that's our bread and butter. That's what we trade in.
And sorry, how long have you been with Justitia now?
I joined Justitia only in September last year. I've been an employment lawyer for roughly 22 plus years. Prior to Justitia, I was with the Australian Industry Group, Workplace Lawyers, on and off since 2010, and prior to that, two large stints for big private practices. But when I first came out of uni, I worked in what was left of industrial relations for the Victorian government. So I did that for 2 years, then moved into private practice.
Now, the crux of our conversation today is, you know, discussing lawyers working part-time arrangements, you know, for lifestyle reasons. Now, you, I understand, work, I think it's 3 days a week, and in the other 2 days, you're pursuing another interest. Can you tell us about your current setup?
Sure. So that's it in a nutshell. 3 days as a lawyer, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, often Sunday, I'm a writer/journalist. And how that came to pass, super long story, so I'll try to cut it short, but I have had breast cancer twice. The first time I had it was in 2007. And I said to myself at the time, if I ever get it again, I'm going to quit being a lawyer and go off on a frolic and do something super fun. In 2013, I was diagnosed for the second time, and it was the full palaver that time. There were was extensive operations, reconstruction for a number of years. But when I returned to work after the first big operation, I think with the benefit of hindsight, I was actually experiencing a bit of compassion fatigue because I would have clients and colleagues come to me. I was then the head of the Victorian team. So I was the state manager as well as a legal practitioner director. And I would have clients and colleagues and juniors and all of my reports come and speak to me, and they'd say they had a problem. And in my head, I'd think that's not a problem. And when I started, when I acknowledged that's the way that I was feeling, it was a hop, skip and a jump before I realized I actually didn't want to be a lawyer anymore. It was time to jump and do something different. And I had no idea at the time what it was. In fact, I didn't even think I had transferable skills, which with the benefit of hindsight is insane. So I spoke to my lovely boss, a bloke called Peter Nolan, and he was something akin to working for Santa Claus. And I told him I didn't want to be a lawyer anymore. And he said that was fine, but I needed to come back to him with a plan. And I was also still undergoing other operations. So he said, have your operations, come back to me and tell me what you want to do. And I came back at the end of that period and said, look, I still don't want to be a lawyer. I haven't 100% got it figured out, but I think it involves writing. And from that point, it was only a year until I was the lifestyle and music editor for Time Out magazine, Melbourne. And the way that unfolded, it was almost like things dropped from the sky into my lap. And I think because I hadn't studied journalism, I didn't have any understanding of how hard it was to crack the industry. So I just had a lot of moxie about me, really. I started by, I wrote an article on Spec about a CD that Johnny Cash's estate had released posthumously. I sent it to Beat Magazine, which was Street Press. They said they liked it and would I start reviewing for them? So I did. And then from reviewing, I ended up, I would interview maybe 8 bands a week at that time, still having operations, would interview bands in my pajamas. And it brought such joy to my heart to be, people loved what they were doing. And it gave me a buzz, which I desperately needed at that point of time. And then I was, through mates, I met the then Time Out editor, head of Melbourne. She had some articles fall through, commissioned me to write a couple of pieces, and then they asked me to intern at the end of that. And I think I was probably the oldest intern that Time Out has ever had. And at the end of that, they appointed me their lifestyle music editor. After a couple of years working for them, I think in a true karmic twist of fate for an employment lawyer, my job was actually made redundant. And after that, I freelanced for a couple of years. So I freelanced for The Age. I ended up with my own column for a very brief period of time about all of the cool things to do in Melbourne that month. And we had basically released the first column and we went into COVID lockdown and all of the cool things in Melbourne dried up overnight. So between work drying up overnight and at the time I was also caring for my folks, my dad had lung cancer and my mum had a stroke. So I was caring for them and freelancing, but the freelancing was drying up. And magically, one of my former colleagues reached out and said they were slammed and would I contemplate going back to being a lawyer? And I said yes, but it was on this proviso. And these are the things, when I quit being a lawyer, I never could have dreamed that this would be possible. I said that I was now tattooed from head to toe. I didn't really want to wear a suit anymore. had gotten rid of my car and rode a pink bicycle, and I only wanted to work part-time. And they looked at me and said, fine. And I was like, oh, holy heck, I didn't imagine you were going to say yes. But that was end of 2019, and I've been working part-time as a lawyer ever since.
Well, there's a lot to pick up on there, Meg, which we'll get to on the other side of this. Meg, there's a number of questions I have for you on the back of, you know, that very detailed and illuminating story that you've just told us. And so I hope I can remember all of the questions that I have in my head. But I might start by asking you to sort of think back to that period, or those periods rather, of ill health that you had. And I ask this question, you know, with the context that, you know, I've suffered severe clinical anxiety and depression and, you know, have been hospitalized for that in my time, which is partly why I'm no longer a lawyer myself, and I've got into writing. Now, of course, you know, I would never suggest that my own experiences are comparable to the health concerns that you had. But what I did find with mine is that it gave me a much clearer and greater perspective on who I was and what I valued and what I wanted for my life and my career. And so I'm curious to know if you had a similar awakening or epiphany, you know, coming out of your periods of ill health, that, you know, even though you had grown up wanting to be a lawyer your whole life, that perhaps things had changed.
That's a great question. And I would agree 100%. It was a form of course correction. So you would never, I wouldn't recommend going through what I did to any, you wouldn't do it for fun, put it that way. The first time I had breast cancer, I can remember people saying to me, Meg, you must have learned so many great lessons. And I would really bristle at that. It just irked me so horribly. At the time I was like, no, it's just a thing I've experienced and I've not learned a lesson. The second time round, I was at least open to the idea that there were lessons to be learned, and my life needed some course correction, and it highlighted to me what my fundamental values were. I put a great premium on joy, glee, and I think I can tap into that in the context of working at a law firm, but also outside of working at a law firm. I think we're here for a good time, not a long time. It made me realize that I'm very driven by the concept that I need to be helpful. If I am being of service to other human beings, that is very gratifying to me. So I need to be experiencing joy and being of service. Now, if either of those two things cease to be the case, then it is a sign for me to pull the pin, look for something else again.
So you're working 3 days with the firm, and then on the other 2 days you are pursuing your own projects. What kind of writing or other work are you doing on those 2 days now?
Sure. So previously it was a lot of freelance work, and that spanned everything from writing for industry publications, so veterinary magazines, dental magazines. My husband is a builder, so I don't think he's ever been quite so as excited as when I wrote for construction magazines. He'd show everyone in the lunchroom what I had written. So it ran from that to what my true passion is. I enjoyed writing those articles very much, by the way, but my true passion is music journalism. And I've written for everyone from Mojo magazine through to Rhythms, Beat, Time Out. In the last year, I have been pulling back on the articles that I'm writing for other people because I am now writing my first novel. There is a chapter from that is going to be published shortly in an anthology published by Allen and Unwin of their new writers.
That's so fantastic. I mean, I have two published books myself. Both of them are nonfiction, though, and writing a novel is one of the dreams I have left in my life. I think that intellectual and certainly emotional and creative challenge is an Everest that I'm very much looking forward to one day climbing and hopefully summiting. And just sort of in reflecting on that, you know, this project that you're pursuing, you know, 2 days a week, whilst also, you know, working 3 days a week at Justitia, it seems as though, you know, by virtue of the experiences you've gone through in your life, you know, both sort of personal and then also vocational, that you must have a radically different sense for what it means to be a lawyer, and certainly what a lawyer looks like compared to what you would have had in the early years of your career. And when I say what a lawyer looks like, I don't mean just that, you know, you're tattooed from head to foot and ride a pink bicycle. But yeah, you must have a very different idea of what it means to be a legal professional.
Yes, definitely. I think in my earlier years of practice that being a lawyer meant that you wore beige and court shoes. No disrespect intended. If that's what you like to wear, it's just not personally my bag. And that said, I was very tied to my identity as being a lawyer. And with operations and then redundancy after I did change my career, it pushed me to the realization that I am not my job. So I, as a human being, I'm not a legal professional. I am not a writer. I am a bundle of other things who happens to do those two things. Because I think being too tightly identified with what you do to earn an income, if for any reason that is ever pulled out from underneath you, it's a bit of a devastating blow, that's all.
You were mentioning earlier, you know, the conversation you had about, you know, putting forward, you know, your proposition, saying, you know, this, you know, I want to work a certain number of days a week. This is how I look. This is how, you know, I'm presenting. Take it or leave it. And, you know, I'm not necessarily suggesting that those are the words you used, but it certainly sounds as though, you know, you had a non-negotiable idea in your head for what you were willing to do, what you're willing to tolerate day to day, and being true to your values, and that you were surprised that that was accepted rather than rejected. So for those listening who might be keen to explore part-time arrangements through which they can, you know, better live out certain lifestyle considerations, do you have any guidance on how best they could go about those conversations with their employers?
I think do it gently. I have a couple of provisos to everything I've just said. So I had a lot of runs on the board before I was in a position that I felt comfortable to put that on the table as the way I wanted to work. And if I had been proposing that when I was a second, third, fourth, fifth year lawyer, I don't think it would have been met with the same reception. There was a great demand at that point of time when I put that proposition on the table. But I also think things in the legal industry have actually changed within a reasonably short space of time. It would have been unthinkable when I quit in 2013-14 to say that's how I wanted to practice. So fast forward just a couple of years, it wasn't just acceptable, it was a welcome proposition. In Justitia, it is a firm that is so open-armed and open-minded. They bend over backwards to make their part-time arrangements seamless, not just for the practitioners who are doing the work, but also from the client perspective. Because if either of those things faltered, then it's not good. If it's no good for the client, if it's no good for the lawyer, it's not going to work. So in putting it on the table as a proposition, I am also, whilst I am very protective of the days that I write, I also acknowledge that working part-time has a price. There's a premium on that. So sometimes I need to be available outside of my designated days. Sometimes I need to take calls. Sometimes I need to drop a couple of emails. Really, though, the way it's structured is so well designed that the work that I do, the legal work I do on my writing days, is actually very minimal. But I couldn't afford to be completely rigid about it. And I also need to be sensible. So when I was interviewed, I was wearing long sleeves, but I, for the sake of candor, I did say it, very heavily tattooed. And the thing we discussed at the time was that some clients are more conservative than others. if I was going to court, for instance, I would definitely be wearing long sleeves. If I'm dealing with a client who is more conservative, likewise wearing long sleeves. So I need to be able to read the room.
Meg, I just got a couple more questions for you, which we'll get to on the other side of this. Meg, just following up on what you said about, you know, having a certain number of runs on the board so that you could secure such an arrangement for yourself. For those listening to this who might be a Gen Z or millennial lawyers who may not technically have the runs on the board that you do, are there ways that they might be able to have these conversations with their employers? You know, so long as the work's getting done, so long as the clients are happy, you know, as you noted, you know, should there be any reason why those coming through the ranks can't secure similar arrangements?
I don't want to give anyone a bum steer, so I'll be cautious in the way I respond to that. I think technically the answer is no. There's no reason it shouldn't be available to anyone irrespective of the period of time for which they've been practicing. Whether or not that's something an employer is prepared to swallow is a different question. However, there are definite benefits to employers being more open-minded about these sorts of working arrangements. So, for instance, by the time I'm back to work on a Monday, I am full of beans, refreshed. I have verve, and I look forward to going to work for the firm on a Sunday, which is, I actually think that's quite an unusual. I don't know that many people who look forward to work on a Sunday, quite frankly. So no harm in having the conversation, exploring the idea. Sometimes I think it's important to start the way you intend to continue. So if you do want to work part-time, don't start letting it, and your employer says yes, don't let it bleed too much into your other days so that you end up working 5-6 days in a compressed time frame, unless, of course, you have actually agreed to a compressed working week, which is a different kettle of fish. Start the way you intend to continue.
Yeah. And for the employers themselves, you mentioned the need to be open-minded. You know, how best can a law firm owner, you know, a partner, a general counsel, you know, how can they, you know, be more open-minded, you know, empathetic and accommodating to individual staff members so that their idiosyncratic needs, you know, can be met, you know, to the extent that, you know, of course, the work is getting done and, you know, clients are happy and nothing is getting left behind. How best can they, you know, shake off, you know, those traditional mindsets of everyone works Monday to Friday, 9 to 5?
Well, I think about client demand for a start. I think clients really respond to people behaving with integrity and authenticity. If you let your lawyers be themselves, you will get the best out of them. And that might be the way that they work, the way that they look, the types of work that they like to do. If an employer is open-minded to that, the lawyer has a better capacity to be a better lawyer, I think, and clients respond very, very well to it.
Just finally, Meg, I'm curious to know how you're feeling at this point in time. You're sort of looking ahead for the rest of your career, you know, whatever that may entail. I mean, how are you feeling about, you know, where you're at as a part-time lawyer that is, you know, pursuing other very meaningful interests?
Well, one of the things I'd really like to highlight is that I look to the future now and consider my future as being sustainable. So once upon a time, when I was working as a lawyer in my youth as well, sometimes I used to work 21 days straight and then I'd end up exhausted and crook. So my previous ways of working were not sustainable in the long term by a long shot. The way I work now, I could work indefinitely, quite frankly, because I enjoy the work. It brings me satisfaction. Like I said, I look forward to going to work. And I have just a burgeoning sense of excitement about the outside projects I'm working on as well. So something's going to be published shortly. Excitement. If I had to sum it up in one word, it's actually excitement.
Well, that's a lovely place for us to finish. And I think being excited to get out of bed in the morning and go to work is all any of us can ever ask for. Meg Crawford, thank you so much for your time on the show, and thank you for sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to the listener for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating and review on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts, as it'll help other lawyers discover and enjoy this show. And if you've got ideas for other episodes we can run, please get in touch at editor@lawyersweekly.com.au. You can also reach us on social media. See you again next time.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature and does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you. Guests appearing on this podcast may have a commercial relationship with the companies mentioned.
In-house counsel, are you feeling a little more flustered amidst the changing legal landscape and your newfound expectations? Would you like clarity on exactly what they are and how you can lead at the forefront of change? Lawyers Weekly Corporate Counsel Summit, coming to Sydney in May, will unpack the essentials on what you need to know to achieve the best outcomes for your business and clients. With sessions exploring the Great Resignation, recessions, cyber threats, and ESG considerations, plus more in the aftermath of the pandemic, alongside tactical sessions giving you an upper hand with focus on strategic influence, this event is not to be missed. Visit corporatecouncilsummit.com.au to learn more about the event and expert speaker lineup and to secure your ticket.